This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It is 5 o'clock on a Tuesday here in the nation's capital. And if it's 5 o'clock, it's Tuesday, and you heard air horns, it's time for a Tischler Tuesday, everybody. Today's edition of Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast from Monumental Sportsnet. Mitchell, how are we doing on this Tuesday?
Oh, we're doing great. As long as this team keeps winning and this offense keeps humming, we need to keep firing up those air horns.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an air horn kind of town right at this point. Everyone's partying, everyone's having a good time. But Mitchell, I did dare ask the question for our Vibe Check Tuesday segment to the fan base that I will start asking you as well. I went there. I went full sports talk radio host, and I dared ask, is this team contenders?
If you're asking me to answer the question right now, I would say yes. But we'll know a lot more after Sunday. I mean, each time that this team has played, you know, a team that's kind of a step up in competition, they've raised their level. And to be fair, I think we thought the Browns defense was going to bring a little more towards Jaden Daniels and this offense and be able to slow him down a little bit. And, of course, that didn't happen. And so as much as I want to talk about the vaunted Ravens defense and how good of a team it is, the Ravens are actually Super Bowl contenders. They've proven that over the years. Lamar Jackson is an MVP. We know what kind of team they are. This will be a great litmus test for the Washington Commanders, for Jaden Daniels, for Joe Witt Jr., for this entire team to kind of figure out where they stand.
No, I totally agree. And I think, like, just functionally, because they're 4-1, you get to that point from a record standpoint, you're obviously in the mix for contending for your division, contending for a wild card spot. Are you a Super Bowl contender yet? Like, that's a different question. And nobody, you know, we won't know that about anybody for sure until November, December, except for, say, the Ravens, who have been on the verge of it, the Chiefs, who have obviously won it 2 years running. But I do think that, to your point, they have, like, I thought the Cardinals presented some interesting challenges for them defensively. There were obviously other areas to exploit, and they absolutely beat the brakes off them. Cleveland, defensively, there's some stuff there where you're like, hey, this could be a problem. And the fact that they have just absolutely destroyed all comers since week one in Tampa, Mitch, does make me look at this team, I think, differently, even though there is a rookie quarterback in place.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that this team is Jaden-proof, but I mean, every time they've been faced with something, they've shown out and they've stepped up their offensive game. And I think one of the things I've been most impressed with was, you know, you had the unbelievably efficient offense the 2 weeks in a row against the Bengals and then against the Cardinals. Against the Browns, they struggled a little bit. I mean, you know, midway through that second quarter, you're looking up and you're like, oh man, like, you know, this team isn't really performing quite well on offense, and then they start ripping off big play after big play after big play, and all of a sudden you look up at halftime and they have 24 points, and this game is almost out of reach for the Browns. And so I think the fact that you're seeing this team kind of do it in different ways, you know, we've seen Jaden dominate throwing the football. We've seen the team dominate on the ground. We've seen them, you know, dink and dunk their way up and down the field, and then we've seen them, you know, hit big plays. I think speaks to the staying power of what we're seeing on the offensive side, because they're not reliant on one particular thing to make this offense go.
Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, with us on the Hoffman Show. You mentioned how they did things differently offensively. It wasn't this 70, 80% completion percentage, 90% against the Bengals. Jaden was in the mid-50s, but they found big plays. What impressed you or what stood out either in the moment or as you went back and reviewed it that you're like, wow, that's something that's maybe different or the thing that really impressed you the most from what they were able to do offensively?
Yeah, I mean, this Browns defensive line is probably the best defensive line they've played yet so far this season, I believe. And I was just really impressed with the way that Cliff Kingsbury manipulated that defensive line with what he did both in the run game and the pass game. You know, on the left side, you had Brandon Coleman and Cornelius Lucas going up against Myles Garrett, who is one of...
Sounds like we lost Mitch there for a second. Oh, do we got Mitch back? Hello. Oh, no, Anthony's okay. Talking to him on the phone. All right, Mitchell, now we got you. We got you back there?
I got you. The joys of, you know, cell phones in this day and age. But
yeah, modern technology. Saying, telephones.
The Browns have a really good defensive line. I just really liked what Cliff Kingsbury did in terms of trying to trick them and move their eyes. You know, he does a lot of, you know, false pulling with the offensive line. But you look on the outside, just kind of in the pass pro game, and, you know, you have Brandon Coleman, Cornelius Lucas over there on the left side against Myles Garrett, one of the best defensive ends in football. And they sent running backs, they sent tight ends at him. They chipped him. They didn't let him run free. And ultimately, you know, they gave Jaden Daniels the time in the pocket to, you know, to read the defenses and get the ball out. And what's impressive about Jaden is that, you know, when teams bring kind of zero blitzes or extra rushers that you can't account for, ultimately, it's on the quarterback to account for that free rusher. And I think there were four times in that game there were free rushers. He was 2 of 2 for 75 yards passing and 2 of 2 for, you know, 60-plus yards rushing. And he did a great job of neutralizing any sort of pressure that was coming his way. And I think Cliff Kingsbury has just put together an incredible game plan for these guys the first couple weeks of the season.
Mitch, one thing that I also think is worth pointing out for about this offense, and really this is team-wide, but specifically it shows up on a couple of plays offensively in this game, the hustle and the extra stuff that they do, right? Luke McCaffrey on the B-Rob touchdown in the first quarter blocking for 4 or 5 seconds, and he winds up not only blocking his corner out of the play for long enough to slow-mo break a tackle, but then he blocks him into a pursuing safety, so he gets 2 on that play. Olamide Zaccheaus running down the field, recovering the Eckler fumble on the 50-yarder. When you heard DQ talking about some of that stuff, the hustle, the play style in the offseason, like, were you a believer that it could really lead to results like this, or has seeing it in action changed your perspective at all?
Oh, seeing it in action has absolutely changed my perspective. I mean, every coach talks about that, wanting guys to buy in, whether they're getting the football or not, you know, working their butts off, you know, on plays that aren't necessarily called in their direction. And I think we saw some of the faults when that doesn't happen last year, you know, with the Eric Bieniemy offense, because you had guys who didn't think they were going to get the ball. They weren't coming off the line fast. And then ultimately, you know, one guy not running their route hard or not doing their job, you know, to the nth degree affects the entire play. And, you know, you can talk about culture all you want with Ron Rivera and, you know, previous group. This is the culture that you need and that you want. Last week, you had Terry McLaurin lead blocking on a touchdown run. You know, you mentioned the Luke McCaffrey run, the Olamide Zaccheaus fumble recovery. Brian Robinson is playing super beat up on a hurt knee, and he picks up 2 blitzers on one play that allows Jaden to kind of roll around to the outside and hit Perry for that super long, that long pass. I mean, what's most impressive to me about all of this has been the buy-in from this unit, and particularly on offense, but we're starting to see it a little bit more on defense kind of as I think they're getting more comfortable in the defense. But you're seeing guys that are out there playing hard from the snap to the whistle, and that's not always been the case here in Washington, and it shows you how much of a difference it makes when guys are willing to buy in and be a part of all that.
Right. We just don't remember Austin Ekeler fumbling because they recovered it. And it's like things like that that you become huge, like in the past, oh my God, 50-yard run, we can't even do that right. And all of a sudden you see it happen. And by the way, if he hadn't recovered it, Luke is right there. Brandon Coleman's chasing the play 50 yards down the field. Like John Bates is coming to clean up. Terry's out in front. He doesn't recover the fumble because he's trying to lay a block and get in front of Myles Garrett, who for some reason is 50 yards down the field on it to hurt Achilles because he's a maniac. So it's stuff that just adds up, and it's really cool to see. You do mention, though, the defensive side of the ball. They're starting to come together. Logan and I kind of struggled with just how much credit to give them because this Cleveland offense was so horrendously bad. How did you and JP parse it out in terms of like, yeah, they did a great job, but also the test was only so hard against the Browns on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, you take it with a grain of salt because of the team that they're playing. I've seen Deshaun Watson's numbers over the past, 2 years or whatever, and recognized that he wasn't playing well. It wasn't until I got eyes on him for a full 48 minutes that you get a real feel for 60 minutes for a real feel for how broken of a quarterback he is. But you know what? You can only play the team that's in front of you. And there are a couple things that I like that I think we're going to see a little bit more of as we move forward, particularly along the defensive line. I like they had John Allen, Daron Payne, Johnny Newton, and Frankie Luvu lining up as kind of your four D linemen. And those are four dudes that Johnny Newton we're still learning about. But the other three are trustworthy pass rushers. And I liked when they got into obvious passing situations. It wasn't always, let's get the fastest defensive ends on the field. Let's get the guys who are going to contain the quarterback. And I thought they did a really good job of that last week or 2 weeks ago against Kyler Murray. They did a good job this week against Deshaun, who clearly didn't want to run a whole lot. But that's going to be an important part as you look forward to this Ravens game. I mean, teams have been trying to hem up Lamar Jackson for years and haven't been able to find a way. And ultimately, that Lamar is going to make a couple big plays. It's going to be about limiting those big plays and making sure that, you try and make him as one-dimensional as possible and not let him beat you with his feet.
Okay, Mitchell, we paused the serious football analysis for an investigative story here because I do believe that you were the only one who, outside of me, saw live, although many other people have been asking questions about it, that John Allen and Daron Payne did play rock, paper, scissors on the field to see who stayed on the field after a certain package was called where one of them had to sub out. So we were then at the Daron scrum post game where Daron told us after very intrepid questions by the two of us that he actually lost and John ran off the field and let him stay on anyway. However, Nikki Javala reported that John thought that he lost. So there seems to be some discrepancy here on what happened. Are you committing right now as the one amongst the two of us that will actually be at practice this week and be in the locker room and conducting interviews to follow up on this story and get the answers that we all crave and must have?
We will get to the bottom of it. I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a he said, he said with it. Mm. And, they're going to go along. I think Daron did the right thing by just kind of being like, yep, I won. I'm going to stay on the field right now. But it's funny, that happened in the fourth quarter of the game, and I saw it happen, and I kind of looked at it, and I was like, that can't possibly be what I thought it was. And then, you sit, whatever, 3-4 seats down from me, and you're like, I think John Daron just played rock, scissors, paper. And I was like, yes, okay, fine. My eyes aren't deceiving me. That is what it is. And it was fun in the postgame locker room to hear John and Daron have a little bit of fun with it. I thought you asked them a great question, finding out who won and who lost. I guess I just assumed that Daron won since he stayed on the field. But
well, I asked what he won with because I assumed that he won. We did come up with a theory. Anthony, was this your theory yesterday that we came up with? Or maybe it was Phillips that came up with this. I think it was Phillips, yeah?
Yeah, with Phillips.
Yeah. So as Phillips and I were talking about this yesterday, because it is a shame, Mitch, that Phillips wasn't there because this is clearly directly in his department.
Yeah.
We think that perhaps they play under different rules, which would be kind of funny because they've known each other for as long, going back to Alabama. They've known each other for a decade, been playing next to each other for a decade. This doesn't feel like something that they have, that this is the first time they've done this. But what would make sense is that if Daron says he threw paper and lost, but John says, no, he threw rock and he won, do they not agree on rock, paper, scissors or rock, paper, scissors, shoot? Because if you go on shoot, and John thinks you just go on rock, paper, scissors, then your hand is still in the rock shape. And so if you go on shoot, then Duran throws the paper, but John already thinks that he's a loss and he's running off the field. I think we need to investigate that theory, the Phillips theory, if you will, because I think it's a good guess.
I like the Phillips theory. That's pretty good. I think it all happened quickly in the moment, and I think John probably was like, this might not be the best idea for us to be doing in the middle of a football field and just wanted to get off. But let me ask you this question. I've never played this game where there's not a shoot involved. Are you a non-shooter?
I always try to clarify because growing up, I had people and friends that would do it both ways. Hey, Anthony, where are you? Are you a rock, paper, scissors shoot? Or are you just rock, paper, scissors?
I'm definitely shoot.
Yeah, I prefer rock, paper, scissors shoot, but every time you take it for granted, someone goes rock, paper, scissors, and then you're waiting on shoot, and they throw down scissors on like the third thump, and you're like, what are you doing? It's rock, paper, scissors shoot.
So what's been fun for me this week is I have always, like a kid, called it rock, scissors, paper.
I did notice that.
My friends give me a hard time about it all the time that I'm wrong, and I'm just indignant about it, saying that, you know, you're wrong, I'm right. I didn't know that there was such a fervent following of Rock, Scissors, Paper on Twitter, and that those people would be so enthusiastic to tell me how wrong I am about what I call the game.
I was going to say, bitch, has anybody told you that you're right?
Yeah, me. Right between my ears, every single time I say it, it says I'm right.
Do you know the origin of how you began to say it differently than everyone else?
I don't know. I'm actually having dinner with my parents a little bit later tonight, and I want to find out whether it's just like a Tischler thing or whether I just decided that my name was better than the name that is widely accepted elsewhere.
All right. Well, we look forward to the follow-up on both what happened with John and Duran and the origins of your inverted name for the game.
There's a lot.
I feel like Mitch was going to say something funny there, and then his phone cut out again. Oh, no. We can't lose Mitch twice in one interview. Anthony, you're going to have to pick up the phone and see if he's there. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We do very important investigative journalism, and now Mitch Tischler is back with us. Mitch, what were you going to say about all the follow-up?
Yeah, I was going to say that we've had a lot of investigative journalism around this team and this franchise for a lot of years, but this might be the most important one.
That in Congress, one in 1A and 1B. Exactly. When you have been covering this team for a long time, you've been around this team for a long time, you've been to a lot of big games, and you've been to the rest of them, which is most of them. This is the most important, just purely on the field game for this team since when, in your mind?
To be honest, I started covering the team in 2008. And I think what's a lot of fun is this is the best record they've had since 2008. So it's almost full circle for me through the first five games. Obviously, the playoff games are the biggest games, but there's always so much about getting to the playoffs. They had to win seven straight, you know, to sneak in, and you know, then you're playing the Super Bowl champs when they played the Bucks, or you're playing Tom Brady and the Bucks, or RG3 has a knee injury, you know. So who knows what that's going to look like. I think this is the biggest game that they've played, certainly the biggest regular season game, but the biggest game they've played since I've covered the team, because this is the first time that I've been around the team where there are questions of, hey, how good exactly is this team? Are they good enough to sneak into the playoffs, or are they good enough to actually make some noise? And as Jaden Daniels continues to exceed expectations every step of the way, it's hard to not start leaning towards this is a team that can win real football games when they matter. And so to get a test like this against the Ravens this early in the season is such a good starting point to get a feel for kind of who they are, where they are. So to me, this is the biggest game in the, whatever you want to call it, 16 years that I've been covering this franchise.
Wow. Yeah, I think especially if you take off playoff games, there's a couple of like win and get in games that feel like they have to be mentioned. But I mean, those are quasi playoff games. And a lot of those were in years where like they weren't, like, even if they made the playoffs, I don't think anyone was scared of them. And so I totally understand what you're saying. I guess my other follow-up question, we'll wrap up with this thought, Mitch, is like, there's a bunch of questions that have been answered about this team. You know, they do certain things far better than we anticipated them doing them. What are the biggest lingering questions for you, and whether they can be answered this weekend against Baltimore, or like the can Cliff still cook like this in November, December question? Like, what are the big things that still need to be checked off for you outside the obvious of health and consistency?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, we've seen when Cliff was in Arizona, him do well early in seasons and then fail to kind of adjust as the season moves on. And I think as we get through this season, that'll definitely be something that I'm keeping an eye on. But for right now, it's got to be on the defensive side of the football. I mean, they've had two straight games where they let up 14 or less. They didn't get beat, you know, too bad over the head by star receivers. You had quarterbacks who are named and, you know, kind of are Lamar Jackson light, I would say, in terms of their want to and ability to scramble and all that. I don't know that the Ravens wide receivers are all that, you know, scary when you think about going down the field, but the combination of Lamar and Derrick Henry in the backfield, this team did a good job, a relatively good job against the run last week, but they've given up a lot of yards between the tackles through 5 weeks. And now you have Derrick Henry coming to town who, you know, almost ran for 200, whatever it was, 2 weeks ago. So I think, to me, the questions right now are centered around, can the defense follow up these two good performances with even a decent one? I don't think there's any expectation that they're going to stop the Ravens up and down the field, but are you going to be able to hold them to under 30 points? Are you going to be able to force them to punt a couple times or, you know, go three and out every once in a while and, you know, give your offense an opportunity where it doesn't have to operate at 100% efficiency to come out with a win?
It's Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, which you can check out, well, wherever you get your podcasts. It's him and JP Finley. You can also check them out on Monumental Sportsnet's app as well, especially live post-game on Sundays. Mitch, always appreciate it, sir, and we will talk to you next week. Enjoy Baltimore.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, and I'll be back with some more info on Rock, Scissors, Paper for you.
Excellent. We might even have to have you back on before then. There's certain updates that cannot wait. Appreciate it, and have a lovely dinner with your parents as well.
Thank you.
All right, that's Mitch Tischler, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, Take Command Tape Tuesday. Inside, how Jaden Daniels found yet another way to win.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With the second pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels holds the keys to the Commanders' future.
Daniels is going to walk it in for the touchdown.
Take Command holds the keys to knowing how he played.
In the big moment when you needed to make plays, he just consistently made plays.
It's time for a Take Command Tape Tuesday.
Jaden Daniels just lays it out there perfectly. What a throw.
On the Hoffman Show.
It's a funny game, Logan, when you can score 34 points for your quarterback at the start of the fourth quarter, and you still go back and watch the tape and go, oh, there's a little bit more left here.
Yeah.
They could have scored 50. Like, and sometimes that's football, right? Like, every play is designed to work. Oh, that if that had just been a little bit better, you can do that to an extent every week. I think what's interesting about this one is there's some stuff that he's done pretty frequently this year that he misses in this game. There's a couple missed reads. There's a couple missed throws. And yet, the thing that is so spectacular about him right now, and the thing that we talked about this on the Instant Reaction show, and the tape kind of confirmed it, when you can just make a couple of really key, big, explosive plays, you can wipe away smaller mistakes, and you don't have to be as efficient. You don't have to be as perfect as they've been the previous three games of the win streak, now 4-4-1, because you can make up for little misses with big gains. And I feel like that is the story of Jaden Daniels Sunday.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of what the narrative was going to be. It was like, how do you find explosive plays with how Cleveland was going to pressure you? And I think the first explosive play to Terry is a great example of that. But there's also plays later on in the game. I think you got to give credit to Austin Ekeler. You know, that explosive play is huge. And but they all lead to points. They all lead to scoring opportunities. And Jaden Daniels, you know, making free runners miss and understanding when to scramble. And if you are going to play a lot of man coverage and we're going to pick it up and you're going to have your back to the quarterback, he's going to hurt you. And I think that's the cool thing, is that he was able to find explosive plays down the field. The one to Diami is also really exquisite. I mean, that's just such a tremendous throw. I mean, really just a fantastic throw. The scramble on, I think it was 3rd and 7, where he gets the first down. It's like a 34-yard gain.
I think that might have been a 4th down even.
Maybe. But it wasn't as consistent down to down, but he was still able to make enough plays to make the offense, right, and elevate the offense, which is kind of the whole thing, right? Is we knew that the completion percentage, we knew that the efficiency was going to regress at some point. And so the question then became, can you win when it's not perfect? And I think the thing is yeah, like you could, he's shown how explosive he can be. He can show how explosive and accurate he can be. I think my big question coming out of the game is the thing that we said on the postgame show is, can you still do this in a game flow that's going to be a little bit more challenging versus a team like Baltimore, which is going to score a lot of points, which is going to put a lot of stress on you offensively and defensively, unlike Cleveland, which, again, they came with a really nice defensive plan that Jaden handled well, but they couldn't support it with any kind of offensive production, which is not how you play football in the NFL. You mentioned how Owusu-Koramoah looked gassed going into the second half of that game. They were on the field so much, playing so many snaps in so many different situations. They just didn't get any support whatsoever from the offense. So that's the thing that I come back to is, again, I think this is that we keep talking about steps and stages for Jaden Daniels. This is a really nice step and a really nice stage, but the intensity on that is going to get turned up when you play better offenses and a defense that can complement it. So I think that's something that, again, we keep kind of shadowing or alluding to this Baltimore game. And that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah. I the thing that I have trust in this offense right now is they seem to do everything well. Like, you just have to make a choice as a defensive coordinator of like, what is it that I want to make them do, knowing that they can do it, but we hope they have a bad day. And obviously, they have run the absolute mess out of the football. With not only Jaden, but B-Rob has got a couple of 100-plus yard games. Eckler's been great. Like, they will run the ball down your throat if you give them the numbers to do so. So it's like, okay, well, let's let Jaden beat us from the pocket, because we certainly don't want him to scramble. But he's shown the ability to do that. And there's, you know, if you're going to dedicate an extra player down in the box to run, like, he will pick his matchups. And I think, you know, he's shown a really good understanding of where that, like, the Diami play is very simple, right? He's got one-on-ones, he knows it, but he's like, this Emerson cat has not had a good year defensively for Cleveland. And I think Diami can win here. And even though Diami hasn't had as many of the explosive plays throughout his career as I think a lot of people thought he would when he got drafted, like, he's still Diami Brown. He's still really, really fast,
yeah.
And he trusted Diami to win, and he did, and you have a big explosive play. So I think that's the interesting thing going against Baltimore is, like, and any other, you know, good team they place this season is, like, okay, they're probably going to do what, frankly, Cincinnati tried to do to Baltimore last week with Lamar, of like, can you beat us from the pocket? And in many ways, Jaden's game against Cleveland was similar to Lamar's game against Cincinnati, where it wasn't the most efficient, but like, Jaden completed, was it 15 of 24 or something like that?
Yeah.
We had 238. Like, that's not a slouch a day of passing production. So he found the big plays to make the most out of the completions. And even though there's definitely some where there's some plays left on the field, some opportunities missed, you know, the red zone, you know, obviously was not great, that the pick, and he has a kind of a funky throw on the, the play before it. Like, it could have been even worse. Even worse for Cleveland, even better for Washington statistically, and even better for Jaden statistically with like one or two more key completions. Like, that is the floor underneath him, which is tremendous. Like, I hope people hear all that and like, dang, that sounds really negative. No, that's actually exciting. It's like, he wasn't this like crazy, historically efficient 80% completion guy, and he was still this productive and he was still this good. That's tremendously exciting, because the step that he's in right now is he's finding different ways to win games, and that's ultimately the job.
Yeah. And each week we want to look for some type of growth. And I think that's the thing I just alluded to prior to that, is it wasn't the cleanest. It wasn't the most effective. I'm so excited for this team and this organization. Like, he has all the signs and kind of makings of like what everyone's been looking for here for a long time. But I do think that this team is somewhat imperfect. And I think this offense is still somewhat imperfect from a personnel and talent standpoint, even though they've been playing so well. So that's where, again, like in this game, I was actually hoping that Cleveland could put a little bit of pressure on them offensively. Like, let's say they go 3 and out and Cleveland goes down and scores. Does that change how Cliff calls a game? Does that change any of the dynamics in the offense? Do we lose some of that kind of running ground and pound that's made this team so successful? Is that less in the game plan? Is it more on Jaden? How does he handle more responsibility? So I think that's the thing, again, that I come back to. It's like, yeah, was his performance excellent? Absolutely, it was excellent. But I think he was really, when we talked about this a little bit at the top, but he was really supported by the defense. And the defense was able to, at every turn, give him the support that he needed. So 3 and out, it's okay. We'll get that. We'll get the turnover back for you. Oh, they're backed up. We'll get the ball back for you with good field position. Oh, okay, you're backed up. We punted. It's okay. No points here for Cleveland. And they just were able to constantly do that because of, how effectively the defensive game plan was, but also some of Cleveland's ineptitude. So it's great to see the explosive plays. It's great to see the production. It's great to see the composure, all those things we've seen. But what happens when it is all on him? And that's the thing that
right.
I think is like the next step. And we talked about steps, and I think he answered a step here for sure. But just so fans understand, like, this, the volume on this can get turned up really, really quick if the offense of the other team is really good. And if you think about it, we've played imperfect offense. I mean, Cleveland, the Cincinnati Bengals is a great example of a really good offense that can execute at a super high level, especially when Joe Burrow's playing the way he did. And I think Jaden met that challenge there. However,
yeah, I was going to say Cincinnati was the best one, but also their defense has been horrendous.
Right. And so, you know, Baltimore's a different animal. But again, like, so all these things are really good, and he took a step. But next week, it's going to be a new step. And how's he going to handle that adversity? And how's he going to handle that moment? And I think those are the things that are really exciting about him, is that despite the adversity, despite the situation, despite the imperfectness of this last game, imperfect in air quotes there, because I think it's still a pretty gosh darn good game, he right. seems to meet the occasion. So to me, it's like, where's the line? Like, where is he in his final iteration? Like, where do we see him struggle or stumble? And we haven't really seen it yet. I mean, I know you kind of were alluding to the fact that this maybe was a stumble, but to find the explosive plays the way he did, to work and elevate the offense the way he did in certain moments, I think speaks to the kind of talent that he has. And it just, I want to see where the ceiling stops, basically. Where is that right. ceiling? And I think that's the thing is, in some ways, I'm disappointed because Cleveland didn't challenge him in that way. And we didn't get, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind
of
how
Browns, you didn't hold up your end of the bargain, although you were exactly who we thought you'd be, because you're terrible. And just to clarify, like, I wouldn't say that it's a stumble. He found a different way to be excellent, right?
I don't mean to misquote you there.
I think it's I'm glad you said it though, because it's a good point of clarification, right? It's not that he stumbled; it's that he did it. He found success differently. But I'd also say this, in counter to your point, like, if the bar for him to potentially struggle, where we're like, oh god, can he do it against that team, is Baltimore, like, there ain't five teams that are better than Baltimore. And so, like, look at the rest of the schedule. Carolina, no. The Chicago Bears, that's an interesting one, especially if Caleb gets rolling, because their defense has given up 21 points or less in 10 of their last 11 games going back to last season. The Giants again, the Steelers, who offensively cannot keep up, even if their defense is great. The Eagles, we'll see where they are by mid-November. The Cowboys, okay, but their defense isn't that good. They're maybe starting to find some things. Tennessee, no. New Orleans, no. Philly again. Atlanta, they've been all over the place. Who knows what they are by December 29th. And then Dallas, like, that's it. That's the season. Baltimore's easily, maybe not easily, but Baltimore's definitively the best team you're going to play. And so even if he does struggle and it's like, okay, wow, that was a learning experience. If they were to play Baltimore again, you know, they obviously can't play them in the playoffs, but a Baltimore caliber team again in the playoffs, they make it, they take this easier schedule, and all of a sudden you're in the playoffs facing one of those teams. I have full confidence the way that Jaden's learning curve has been that he'll be better the second time around against that caliber of team. And like, that's kind of the crazy thing with him is like, okay, maybe he will make a mistake, but he's not going to make the same mistake twice. And we've seen that in games. We've seen that almost in drives sometimes. And so game over game, week over week, month over month, I do have confidence that he will find it because I just think he is that caliber of player already. Not that it's going to be smooth forever. Not that he's never going to have off weeks. And we should, you know, remember that he's human in that level. But I do, I don't think the train's going to come off the tracks and crash in any meaningful way, even if it hits a bump in the road and they have to reset on 1 week at some point in the season.
Yeah, no, I see it exactly the same way. I see it exactly the same way, which is exciting. It's, you know, when the season started, I never in my wildest dreams, you know, despite how high I was on Jaden, despite my love and respect for, you know, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and what they've been able to do over the course of their careers, like I never anticipated this kind of turnaround. And it's been really fantastic to see kind of at every level. And it's not, and again, it's not one thing, which is the great thing about it, which we talked about when we kind of reviewed that drive. It's everybody's supporting Jaden's making plays. The effort and attitude of the team is improved. The coaching's much better. And it all of a sudden, it just shows you, I think, kind of some of the things we were kind of maligned, we were much maligned about last year with regards to the staff and regards to the talent on the roster. You just see how that all elevates when the situation's right. And it gives me a lot of hope and optimism that this thing could be kind of what you're talking about. The schedule outside of Baltimore isn't that crazy. I mean, New Orleans has done some good stuff and Philly's always very, very talented. It's a division game. I'm not saying they're going to win out or anything like that, but all of a sudden there's life here. And I think you see that when you talk to the players and when you hear the players talk about Jaden, it's like, man, he just has it. He's the guy. There's something about him. And there's something really fantastic, you know, thinking back to 2012 for me, about when you have that confidence in that position and when you have that hope and optimism and everyone's working hard, because there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It's not just a dark cavern you're running full speed into. It's like, man, if we hit this the right way, we could do something really, really special here. And I think you see that this game is a great data point for that because of how Cleveland played them defensively, which we've talked about ad nauseum so far. But the fact we had to win it a different way and we could is special.
One thing that I did want to talk about with him, just a sequence that I'm looking to get a little more understanding on, is the red zone sequence where he ultimately throws the pick.
Yeah.
So they have the big play to Terry. Obviously, they get down there. I think they run the ball on first down. And there's two throws that I'm like, what's going on here? And I guess I'm curious in part from the Cliff side of it and part from the Jaden side of it. As they get down there and they're trying to punch it in, because obviously red zone execution is huge. Austin Seibert thankfully has been money this year, so they're able to get the field goal, or they would be able to get the field goal if they can just you know, not throw an interception down there. But I'll phrase it this way, because I want to try to be positive with this, because Jaden deserves that based off how he's played. What can he learn from that? / what is he going to do next time when he inevitably throws a touchdown?
What can you learn from it? So let's start with the first one, is Zach Ertz, and they're running basically like what I would call like a pick mesh. So basically you have two guys on the offensive left, they run across, it's man coverage, they try to pick the guy for Zach. I think the timing gets a little bit off, which I think is, again, where probably something most people don't see is Zach's a little bit behind it. So what I mean is, like, you probably want Zach on this clip to be over like the tackle when Jaden's getting ready to throw, as he's going to clear that backside hook defender. So basically, like, there's a guy in the middle of the field. He's the plug player. I think it's Owusu-Koramoah. They run this pick and Zach gets a little bit bogged down. He doesn't clear the hook player the way you'd want him to. You want him sprinting by that guy and you want Jaden to see that, so he can just lead that nice out in front and get the ball there. But Zach's a little bit high. He's a little bit late. He's kind of stacked over the hook player, so the throw becomes a little bit unclear to me. And I'm sure I've seen them rep that in practice and training camp, and Jaden's excellent at it. Like, that guy clears, it's like boom, bang, ball's right there. that coupled with a little bit of pressure on the edge, I feel like he gets in these moments sometimes where he doesn't set his feet. Like, he's at his best, like every quarterback, when he sets his feet. And Jaden's superpower is that he can get to that base kind of whenever he wants to. But he doesn't do it here. And he kind of steps away from it, ball's a little bit high, and sails out of the back of the end zone or whatever it does. But I think, so it's a couple things. One, it's the execution on the play. It could be a little bit crisper. And that happens. That this is the stuff that happens. And we've seen him elevate plays off schedule and do some things. Didn't get right. it done here. So to me, it's the timing. To me, it's his footwork. And what I would say if I'm Cliff, I'm just say, hey, you know that he's coming open. Like, you see Zach running through here. Just, you're going to have to take a hit for the touchdown. Take a hit, deliver a strike, throw it to grass. It's man coverage. There's nobody there. So if you miss the throw, throwing the grass, I can live with that. Don't give him a shot, basically, is what I would say.
I almost feel like he threw to grass, just the grass was way too far ahead of Zach. And it's like, if you could not loft it, but like, you put a little bit more touch on that ball, let Zach run under it.
Yeah.
He just kind of fires a fastball to the spot. And it almost felt like a timing route that was clearly not a timing route. It's one you have to see, because you have to see him clear. You have to, you know, it's a kind of like a mesh concept, I guess.
The best way I can explain it is you have to feel his speed, I would say, after watching this a lot, like over the course of my career. You have to feel his speed enough to know he's going to clear that guy in the timing. And so I'm not sure you feel that from him. And so there is another variation of that where you run the cross, and if the hook player is widening, you take it high. And so, again, I kind of wonder if they weren't necessarily on the same page, because it is bogged down.
He didn't run. Because it does look like he throws it higher, yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, all of that starts to me at the beginning of that play where it gets a little bit muddy. It's like it's a little bit bogged down. The timing's not exactly right. He's not set. He doesn't trust it. And if I'm Cliff, honestly, I'm like, if you didn't love it, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with you throwing that away, because if we – what's the word I'm looking for? If we throw a pick here, or if we do something bad here, obviously we lose points. So if you don't absolutely love it, I'm okay with that.
Throw it away.
So that's how I would coach it if I was in the room with him. But so to me, it's a tough throw. It's a tough look. It looks like a bad miss, but I think it's more on some of the other elements of the play.
Yeah, and again, he was taking pressure late in that down as well. So he's kind of fading back, and you kind of understand it. The next one's the one where it's like, okay, what's the coaching point here? Third and goal from the five, and this is where the pick happens.
Yeah, so this is – I forget what we used to call this with Kyle, but it essentially plays like a spot route. So you get a corner, the tight end kind of works a wide and release and then sits in between the two hook players. The back runs hard to the flat, hopefully pulling out that kind of, I think it's the corner, pulling them wide to make a window for the tight end. And so really this play is like, it's like a post-up play in basketball. You want that guy to run, the tight end to run, turn around right in the end zone, and the ball is on him. So you're throwing with a lot of anticipation, a lot of ball velocity. And this is one where I think Jaden just didn't read it out. He kind of predetermined that he was going to throw the ball to Zach, because that's where the ball should go. And I think when you look at the coverage, you say to yourself, well, there is a soft spot there. But Owusu-Koramoah, with the back running to the flat, and again, this is part of the play design, is sprinting that way. And Owusu-Koramoah, to his credit, does a really good job of closing that window. And I think back to the Arizona game, and there was a couple times where the linebacker is pushing to that spot, and Jaden, because of his quick release, is able to get the ball out so fast and so on time and squeeze it in the window. Owusu-Koramoah is a better football player. He anticipates it better. His coverage instincts were better. He's able to close the window. So if you're looking at it holistically, you'd say that's not there. And usually, are you looking at the play right now, Craig? Do you have one?
I am.
Is there someone running across the formation toward the window?
Terry is wide open on a slant on the backside of this. And that would be my question, right? So this bunch that they have is on the boundary side. Yeah. And they have a two-man concept to the field. So on the offensive left, so the ball's on the right hash. The boundary is the shorter side of the field. For those that have heard that term, you might not know it. The field is the open side of the field. So the ball's on the right hash. They motion, or I guess it's kind of a tighter split with Ertz, and I think it's Zacchaeus down there. And then B-Rob is the back to the right and going into the flat. And on the field side of this, on the backside, they have some wider splits. Terry's on the outside. I think it's Luke is going to run kind of a corner, and he runs fantastic interference. By the way, that is something Luke McCaffrey is incredible at. He is so good at running interference without picking up offensive pass interference. Yeah. Like, that is a skill.
Yeah,
he does a great job. He does that, and Terry is wide open. And they're in part because the linebackers have gone to that three receiver side and have kind of pushed that way now, in part because Jaden opens to that side. But I still think there's so much space that if I'm like, my question to you actually that I wanted to get to you in this film review was like, did he read the wrong side of the field here? Not that he didn't throw with anticipation to the spot and the right concept if he's going to throw this, but because that's so muddy and because there's just not a lot of space there, should he have just been reading the field side anyway? And Terry is wide open on a slant on the backside of this.
Yeah, no, I don't know if he read the wrong side here, but I do think once that, so what you want to do on this is like once that hook player, once Owusu-Koramoah plays hard underneath, you got to know that they're pushing this way. They're pushing with your vision.
Right.
So you want to kind of think about replacing the zone. The thing about this concept here that it's drawn up is it's like, it's a one half of the field and the other half of the field. Sometimes they'll run like a crossing pattern over top where it's like, if that's dead, you just rip it right back to like a shallow cross. Terry's on a slant here. And I don't know, I probably would have worked just looking at how the field's distributed here with the plug player in the middle of the field. I probably would have worked the slant, but it's his prerogative here. And I think I don't know if he thinks this is man. It looks like man and they kind of zone it. They like match it off. You know what I'm saying? In a way that I don't think he's expecting. Because like I think if you start at the start of the snap, you get three guys on the line, right? And so it looks like, hey, we're, you know, a guy's on Zacchaeus, a guy's on Zach, a guy's on the back. So the guy in the back really should push through this window.
Owusu-Koramoah
should push through to the back, right? At least that's what I would anticipate. But instead they pass it off. And so they get like a match concept. So I understand why he does this, and I understand why he's thinking this way. However, once you realize that guy's not matching the back and they're passing it off, you can't throw it. You just throw it out the back of the end zone. You can maybe hit the corner in the back, but like you can't. It's not designed in a way, in my opinion, where it's like I work here to there. They're two separate concepts. You pick them pre-snap, and I feel like they just kind of got them because of how Owusu-Koramoah played it. Quite honestly,
right. And potentially, like, in fairness to Jaden, right, if you're told all week long, hey, in the red zone, they're going to play man. They're going to man this. Like, we've got him. If you get – this is the look. Like, you would imagine that's probably the conversation, and Schwartz deserves credit for mixing it up and making it – you know, the players on the Browns, like, credit to them for making it look like man and kind of getting him here. So
just looking at that, like, I think he probably should have – like, once that's dead, the way that the corner played it, I think you want to try to throw the corner. And that's the read, right? It's – the spot concept to the corner. And so once it gets muddy, my eyes should flick up and I can put that ball right to the back of the end zone. And I think he just kind of was like, it's man. I know it's man, which we've seen him do before, which we've seen him because he studies so much. He prepares so hard. He's like, I know the coverage. This is how they're going to play it. I'm going to trust my study, which as a quarterback, I think that's one of the most challenging things to do is you have to do that. You can't just read and react. You have to anticipate a defensive reaction because it just happens so quickly. Feel like he anticipated the wrong thing and it led to an interception.
For sure. But the fun thing about him at this point in his career, one for the file, stick it in there.
Yeah.
Next time he's going to know better because that is how Jaden Daniels operates. And you have faith that he's again, not going to make the same mistake twice.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.